Inside Florida Politics. The Essential Podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, coming in hot from our studio in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I'm joined, as always, from Tallahassee by the Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief, John Kennedy.
Hi, George.
And ordinarily, we're joined by a third podcaster, Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor Zach Anderson. But Zach is on assignment this week. While, of course, you don't replace a Zach Anderson in the podcasting world, but we do have a very special guest joining us here in the padded West Palm Beach studio, Palm Beach Post staff writer Lulu Ramadan.
Hey, George. Glad to be here.
Lulu, I believe, is making her third appearance on the podcast.
I'm basically a regular.
Practically a regular. Well, you know, President Donald Trump is returning to Florida for another weekend at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach. And while he's here, there's a good chance he will drop in on the Donald J. Trump Grand Ballroom at Mar-a-Lago. That's where the Palm Beach County Republican Party is holding its annual Lincoln Day dinner for a crowd of about 700 people. All kinds of notable Republicans will be there. Senator Lindsey Graham will be the keynote speaker. Florida Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez, former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi will be there. Congressman Brian Mast. One person who will not be there, however, is former massage spa owner Cindy Yang. She's the woman who took that selfie with the president at a Super Bowl party at Trump International Golf Club a couple weeks ago and has become an instant celebrity. Ms. Yang was scheduled to attend the fundraiser this weekend at Mar-a-Lago, but the chairman of the county GOP disinvited her. We'll tell you a little bit about why that is, and Lulu will give us a little more perspective on Ms. Yang and some of her interesting connections to Republican politicians and perhaps the Chinese government. So you want to wait and hear about that. Also, on the podcast, and if you've been listening to us for the last few months, this will come as absolutely no surprise. There is disagreement in Tallahassee about Amendment 4. That's the amendment that voter-approved amendment that granted most felons the right to vote after they've completed their sentences. John Kennedy will fill us in on the latest on that. And speaking of voting, former Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum, after weeks of hype, has announced that he's leading an effort to register 1 million new voters in Florida to try to turn the state blue in 2020. We will talk in a little more detail about that. But first, I think I hear a drum roll and some familiar, funky, royalty-free music. Now, Lulu, you're a veteran of the podcast. What does that music mean?
I think that music means it's time to pick a number.
That's right. The pick a number segment is the recurring segment on the podcast where each of us puts forward a number, and then later on we explain what that number means in Florida politics. John Kennedy in Tallahassee, what is your number this week?
George, I'm coming in with a 416.
416 for John Kennedy in Tallahassee. We always, as always, we do encourage note-taking if you're not driving a car or operating heavy machinery, so you want to write a 416 next to John Kennedy's name. Special guest Lulu Ramadan, do you have a number for us?
I do. Of course I do. So my number today is 1.9.
1.9 for Lulu Ramadan, the special guest, and has been established in the past. Decimal points are not only allowed, but encouraged. And my number is 3.9 million. George Bennett, 3.9 million. So just to review very quickly, and I was told by a focus group recently of one person that we need to move through the numbers more quickly. John Kennedy with a 416, Lulu Ramadan with a 1.9, and George Bennett, that's me, 3.9 million. You want to hang on to those numbers, and we will, at the end of the podcast, explain what they mean in Florida politics. But let's get straight to our lineup here. Lulu Ramadan, Cindy Yang has been in the news a lot. She was in that selfie after the Super Bowl, and that came about because she used to own the Jupiter Massage Parlor where Patriots owner Robert Kraft and other men were charged with soliciting prostitution. Although Cindy Yang sold that establishment 6 or 7 years ago, really not involved with it anymore. But some other interesting stuff has come out about Cindy Yang that Lulu is going to talk about. Now, before Lulu takes the microphone, though, as always, we welcome our guests with the royalty-free surf music. This podcast, we do it with kind of a heavy heart because the music is it's a royalty-free number that's called Breaker Point, but it seems very close to Dick Dale's Miserloo. And Mr. Dale, the pioneering surf guitarist, passed away recently at age 81. So a special Inside Florida Politics tribute to Dick Dale and his influence on our podcast. But let's get to Lulu Ramadan. Just to review, after Robert Kraft got and these other folks got charged with soliciting prostitution at a Jupiter massage parlor, the Miami Herald published a picture of this woman named Cindy Yang. She a Wellington resident. And it was a picture of her at the Super Bowl party at Donald Trump's golf club. Picture of her and the president. And it was noted that this woman in the selfie with the president is the founder and former owner of the massage parlor where Robert Kraft and the others were charged. So interesting coincidence. No suggestion that she had any connection to the establishment now, though, correct?
That's right.
Okay. But you know, so there's this woman in the selfie, little connection there. And then it came out in the subsequent days, there's all kinds of pictures on social media of her. Who are some of the folks that she's been pictured with?
She's been in photos with Senator Rick Scott, with Ron DeSantis, Florida governor, you know, and several others, you know, conservative commentators.
And basically a lot of them, some of them are at Mar-a-Lago and other places. And basically she'll go to a fundraiser like a lot of folks do. And there's a famous person and get a selfie with them.
That's right. Yeah. She'll go, you know, mingle with people and grab as many pictures as possible.
Right. Who among us hasn't seen somebody that is famous and grabbed a selfie with them? But it goes a little beyond that, though, right? Because explain then where some of these pictures were showing up.
Yeah. So it started with this kind of intrigue of a former spa owner who was in this, you know, intimate selfie with Donald Trump. She got close enough to the president to snap a selfie. It really, you know, it started to spiral from there because it was soon reported that she had been selling access to photos and meetings with Donald Trump and his family and in Mar-a-Lago on a website for her company, GYUS Investments. And this website was entirely in Chinese. It was first uncovered by, I believe it was the Mother Jones that first uncovered it.
Okay.
And so, you know, we find out then that she's selling access to Donald Trump and you know, at the same time, she had these really interesting connections to the Chinese government.
Now, let me ask you about the access to Donald Trump. So she, on this website, has these pictures of her with influential people. And the suggestion, at least, that you get from looking at that is, hey, if you do business with this company, you might get access to these folks.
Yeah.
Is there any reason to believe that she actually was able to give people access to President Trump or any of these other folks?
Well, we have no evidence of that right now. Really, what it was the photos gave her this air of access, right?
Sure.
She looked like she was a person who was in these political circles. But in reality, you know, we've talked to several Republicans who have said that she didn't quite have that access. You know, like you said, anyone will stop to snap a selfie with a famous person when they
right.
see him. Doesn't necessarily mean you know him, but
right.
who knows?
So the actual connections or clout that she had with these Republicans, there's no real evidence to suggest that she actually had that, but she had it on the site. And what about the connections that she did seem to have, though?
That's right. So this is the one that's really caught the attention now. This is high-ranking House Democrats, Senate Democrats have called for an investigation, have called on the FBI to investigate Cindy Yang and her connection to the Chinese government. So she held roles with two groups that experts say are linked to Chinese government influence peddling operations. And these two groups are based in the U.S., but it's kind of a known fact. It's even referenced in U.S. intelligence reports that these groups have connections to Beijing and to the Chinese Communist Party. And so essentially, while she had these connections, she had been operating this website where she was, you know, selling access to Donald Trump. And all the while, she also attended a very exclusive forum, economic forum in China, about back in April 2018. And essentially, it was is a forum for high-ranking Chinese communist officials. And in fact, the Chinese president was the keynote speaker. So she was mingling with people who have really high-ranking official positions in China, all the while she was mingling with Republicans here.
So if and when you're dealing with the Chinese government, does any can anybody just kind of show up at this conference and rub elbows with these people?
No, no, definitely not. Our experts tell us it's very exclusive. It's invite only. And, you know, in fact, it's exclusive. You know, usually you have a couple journalists who get to show up, but American media usually isn't even included in this. It's pretty exclusive in that sense.
Interesting. Here, as you saw with this picture of her with the president at the Super Bowl party, and Christine Stapleton, who has been a frequent guest on the podcast, has an excellent story in the Palm Beach Post, or you want to see it at palmbeachpost.com, where she looked through social media at all these folks that go to events at Mar-a-Lago or at the president's golf club nearby in West Palm Beach, and are able to get pictures either with the president or with, you know, at these with other influential people. You know, so for example, I mentioned the Palm Beach County Republican Party Lincoln Day dinner. You could buy a ticket to that for, they started at $375 and go to this event. And, you know, possibly the president will drop in there. And so it's interesting, you know, a large number of folks are able to get, you know, in proximity to the president at his for-profit clubs. And that appears to be what Cindy Yang was able to do. But when you're talking about going to these conferences in China, that's a little more exclusive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's really what caught the eye of, you know, of course, there's a political angle here with this Democratic senators calling for an investigation. But there's a reason, according to experts, there's a reason to be worried because China has a history of peddling influence in this manner. It's called soft power. And you know, they're known for doing it in Australia, New Zealand, here in the U.S., in the United Kingdom. And in fact, that was mentioned in the letter that senators sent to the FBI calling for an investigation.
I think it was in your story or elsewhere. Cindy Yang's attorney, what did he say about this congressional Democrats wanting to investigate?
Yeah. So Cindy Yang is, you know, doing her interview kind of circuit right now. She was on NBC Nightly News yesterday. But she spoke with us really via text message, which was interesting, an interesting choice. But her English is broken and she felt a little worried about kind of speaking with us directly. But we talked with her and she denied having any ties to the Chinese government. You know, she said she loves America, loves our president, you know, loves Trump and, you know, just wanted to get involved.
Very interesting. And you'll be reporting more on it. I believe even this weekend you might have a story.
Yes, that's right. Really keep an eye out because we've got a good story coming out this weekend that will shed a little bit more light on this interesting story.
And for what it's worth, though, the chairman of the Palm Beach County Republican Party disinvited her to this event, just said she's too controversial. We don't want her there distracting from this event. And then Yang's attorney said, well, she feels the same way. She wasn't going to go anyways, and there was no need to disinvite her. But Cindy Yang, I suspect we will be hearing more about her, and you want to look at palmbeachpost.com. One, you want to look, there's a story, as I mentioned, by Christine Stapleton about folks showing up at these events at Mar-a-Lago and other Trump clubs. And then also look for the story by Lulu. And is John Pacenti also on that story?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, Lulu and John Pacenti will have a story coming out soon, more about Cindy Yang and some details on that. Well, let's move on from Chinese-American intrigue to Tallahassee. And I believe we have some more royalty-free music. There you go. That's Swamp Rock, our Tallahassee segment. Theme music, and that means when you hear those CCR like chords, that means that we're going to hear from John Kennedy. John Kennedy, Amendment 4. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
Sure, George. You know, well, this of course was the amendment that was approved by 65% of voters last fall. This restores voting rights more easily to convicted felons who have served their sentences. This was a a very well supported initiative by Democratic allied organizations, pretty much. This is something that many have looked at as the large number of disenfranchised voters in Florida. The thought is many are black, and black voters tend to vote Democratic in elections. This is seen as a big pool of potential voters for the Democratic Party to add to its toll. But you know, like everything around here, it's kind of complicated as far as how to actually implement the legislation, the amendment that was passed last fall. Now you have to basically set the guidelines for how we're supervisors going to actually enroll people that want to get their rights back. So for several weeks, the supervisors have been going ahead registering these, the term of art now is returning citizens. They've been registering them, but the Republican-led legislature and Governor DeSantis, they've concluded that some implementing language is needed. And, you know, it may well be because supervisors have been acknowledging that it's very difficult to get proof that former felons have not only served their time, but also completed their probation and parole, as the that's what the new amendment requires, that you can only get your rights back when you can be verified that you've completely completed your term. And there's also an understanding that any restitution required of these felons, that also be paid. But the other thing that is banned by this amendment would be murderers or those convicted of sexual offenses. They also would be barred from voter restoration, you know, as simply as this automatic process would be. But that also, as the legislature starts diving into it a bit, you know, there's a wide variety of these kinds of offenses that exist on the books. So that when a House committee this week began working on a proposed committee bill to set the guidelines for this new law, the details that started emerging seem to be overwhelming. I mean, for example, there are basically two kinds of murder listed as being prohibited, first or second degree. But then sexual offenses, there's more than 35 of them listed that could keep people off the rolls. This would bar them from automatic restoration. And the crimes include things like prostitution, cyber stalking, video voyeurism, you know, some crimes that some people may think don't deserve the kind of banishment, you know, from the voter rolls. But the most high profile area of dispute right now is pretty much centering on court fees and costs. These fees can include the cost of the electronic monitoring bracelets and drug tests that felons were supposed to be taking during probation. These are considered part of someone's sentence. But the sponsor of the bill, Tampa Republican Jamie Grant, he said that covering these court costs and fees was part of what supporters of the amendment had guaranteed would have to be paid before automatic restoration took place. So, you know, not only is the data on such payments difficult for election supervisors to verify, it's also a higher standard than under the state's earlier system for giving people their voting rights back, which, you know, under clemency required only that a felon pay back all his court-ordered restitution. But, of course, they're trying to make this system easier right now, allegedly. But it's seen that the Republican legislature may be trying to put up some roadblocks as well.
The original language of the amendment, what did it say about completing your sentence? And
yeah, it was completing sentences and that paying pretty much, you know, for completing their probation and parole. And it's a question now of interpretation as to, you know, what does that entail? You know, how far, how
right.
much
have
might you
completed your sentence if you haven't paid the court costs or something?
So that financial aspect of it is what's kind of inflamed Democrats now. You have, you know, Democrats and other advocates of Amendment 4, you know, they're already turning this issue up to 11 right now. You know, New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she tweeted that this sounds like a poll tax. And Hillary Clinton and other Democrats also seized on this analogy. You know, they're kind of trying to liken this idea that that you have to pay your fees before you can register to vote. They're likening it to the old segregation era requirement that, you know, included a tax that was designed to exclude minorities and the poor from voting. So you know, the bottom line is that there's little trust in a Republican-led legislature, which has a history of passing legislation that, you know, a lot of Democrats, a lot of critics saw as creating obstacles to voting, you know, whether it was redistricting boundaries, restrictions on voter registration drives, limiting the hours for early voting as they did in 2011, which caused, you know, massive lines a year later. But it didn't prevent the state from supporting President Obama's reelection. But that's what that was is certainly seen as aimed at trying to do. So, you know, before voters approve this change, you know, Florida's disenfranchised. They had more people off the voter rolls than any other state, Florida being one of only four states where people have to ask to have their voting rights restored after being sentenced for a felony. So this effort has a long way to go in Tallahassee. But, you know, whether Republicans can or whether they care to seek a middle ground with Democrats on this is sort of unknown right now.
Sounds to me like something that will end up in court one way or another, if I had to guess. Thanks for the update. And speaking of voting, and I think what is it, 1.4 million former felons or returning citizens that they estimate are
potentially.
So speaking of voting, Andrew Gillum, remember him? He narrowly lost the governor's race last fall. He for weeks was touting that he was going to make a major announcement, and there was even some speculation that he might be announcing he was going to run for president. He did not announce that. He announced that he is going to be spearheading this drive to register 1 million new voters in Florida. So some of these returning citizens might be a target for that. But the effort is to register 1 million new voters. And explicitly, Gillum says that he wants, by registering new voters, he wants to defeat President Trump in Florida. President Trump carried Florida by 1.2% in 2016. And so this is an effort to turn Florida blue again by registering more voters, presumably more Democrats and progressive voters. Here is a soundbite Joe Forzano is going to cue up of Andrew Gillum talking about his effort.
Since 2008, the Democratic registration advantage has declined rather precipitously. We had a 700,000 person registration advantage over Republicans when Obama was on the ballot in 2008. And as late as my election in 2018, that advantage has shrank to, you know, fewer than 250,000. And obviously a loss suffered by me of about 32,000 vote, you know, difference. And so if Florida is serious about you know, going the way of Democrats, we've got to get very, very serious and intentional about registering voters again.
Just the numbers that he referenced were roughly correct. In 2008, when Obama carried Florida, Democrats outnumbered Republicans in the state by almost 658,000. And then in November, though, when Gillum ran for governor and Bill Nelson ran for reelection and lost to Rick Scott, the Democratic advantage in the state was only 263,000. So the Democrats lost about 400,000 votes of advantage in the last decade. And so they still did have, you know, more than 250,000 voters more than Republicans. But in actual turnout in the November election, about 132,000 more Republicans showed up at the polls than Democrats. So basically, Republicans in November did a better job in Florida of turning out their voters than the Democrats did. John Kennedy, this effort by Andrew Gillum, what do you think it means for him?
Well, it's a way for him to sort of stay in the forefront of Democratic politics going forward into the 2020 campaign. You know, obviously, he is not going to be one of the presidential candidates, of which there are many. Yet it also takes him maybe out of the idea of, you know, had he thrown his name in as a potential presidential candidate, you know, probably would lose. And would this be a second mark against him as a candidate? It could set him on a stage toward political irrelevancy. So this way he can, you know, rally around an effort that the party is hoping will yield some results. I mean, For his part, he's going to probably have to produce this 1 million extra votes. He's getting a little bit of help from Democrats, though, too, in this effort. But they're also announcing that they're looking to add even more to the rolls. So there's a good focus that he can get behind, yet at the same time, not risk the possibility of looking like a loser.
Right. And as, you know, especially if Democrats carry the state, he can certainly, you know, potentially claim some credit
for it.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, we will keep an eye on that. But right now, I think I'm hearing that music again. There it is. That's that royalty-free, funky pick-a-number music. So let's return to those numbers that we had. Lulu, why don't you go first? Your number was 1.9.
Yeah, absolutely, George. So 1.9 is the percentage of Florida voters who identify as Asian American or Pacific Islander. So I picked that number specifically because Cindy Yang and her really intriguing story of going from massage parlor owner to political opportunist kind of shed light on this movement here in Florida. And that's Republicans appealing to Asian Americans. And it's such a tiny slice of Florida voters. But in a state with such close electoral margins, it's really important to appeal to any groups you can. And they're clearly getting more involved than they ever have been. So,
yeah, 1.9% is a landslide in Florida for top of the ticket elections. Very interesting number there. Okay. John Kennedy, your number is 416. Explain that one.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a little bit complicated. Mine is 416. That was the time of day, 416 in the PM, that email started arriving in reporters' inboxes that Governor Ron DeSantis had signed the law making smokable medical marijuana available in Florida. We talked last week about how this surprising development that, you know, the bill cleared the Republican-led legislature and was sent to the conservative Republican governor as the first bill that he was expected to sign. And now, as we're recording this podcast, the flower pot has just started being sold in Trulieve's medical marijuana dispensaries around the state. But 416, when that notice went out, was pretty close to 420, the popular number. For marijuana. Yeah, exactly. Why didn't he wait 4 minutes?
Wait 4 minutes, right.
Exactly. No, there's really no telling if DeSantis's press office, you know, had that symbolism in mind or whether it was just coincidence that the governor's first bill signing came pretty close. Yeah. So, you know, we'll have to keep working on that answer. But, you know, for the 420 term, of course, you know, has given life to marijuana celebrations on April 20th, you know, 420, the month and date. And even the replacement of a mile marker on a Colorado highway where the 420 marker was repeatedly stolen. Evidently, this mile marker now reads 419.99 miles. So it's got some illustrious history. And, you know, how the term the 420 code came into being, there's various reasons, allegedly, but the history, you might say, yeah, it's kind of hazy.
Ah, okay.
See what you did there.
Interesting number, although the judges are going to have to make a determination if 416 as a time of day counts as a number for pick. I guess we'll allow that. There you go.
With an asterisk next to it.
Well, my number was 3.9 million. That's the approximate number of dollars in the bank account of Forward Florida. That's the Andrew Gillum PAC that is expected to help finance this voter registration effort that he is announcing. Some of that money came in after the election, but most of it was there when Gillum ran for governor in the Forward Florida PAC account. And some Democrats have grumbled that if he had spent that money in the fall, he might have been elected governor rather than being a CNN commentator and voter registration leader now. But that wraps up another one of our Inside Florida Politics podcasts. Thank you for listening. I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. As always, it's my honor to host the program. I've been joined from Tallahassee by Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy. Our third podcaster, Zach Anderson of the Sarasota Herald Tribune, was off this week, but he will be returning. And we've had a special guest in the studio, Lulu Ramadan, Palm Beach Post staff writer. I've been assisted here also by Joe Forzano. He was queuing up the clips and the music for us. And as always, the man behind the curtain in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, the Gatehouse Digital Audio Production Director, Adam Fish. Thank you.